Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we begin a four-part February series on the New York suburbs, life and politics. If you think Scott Brown's election was an aberration in Massachusetts, consider that Nassau and Westchester counties switched from a Democrat to a Republican county executive in the November elections, not to mention the election of Governor Christie. Is there a relationship between that and Scott Brown and swing voters swinging once again? Our guest for this four-part series is Lawrence Levy, former Newsday reporter and columnist, now executive director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University on Long Island. Larry, welcome back to WNYC, and thanks so much for doing the series with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great.
Let's start with some basic demographics. Who lives in the New York suburbs? How much is it the Leave It to Beaver stereotype of the 1950s and 60s?
Well, if you asked me that question 20 years ago, I would have said it's basically white, middle, upper middle class people, Italian, Irish, Jewish, second, third generation immigrants whose parents or grandparents came from the old country, acculturated, assimilated, made enough money, and moved out to the burbs. Nowadays, the answer to the question is it's everybody. The demographic change in suburbia, especially in the New York metropolitan area, is incredibly dynamic. You have whole neighborhoods, as you saw in New York City, that are being revived, transformed by new immigrants. Hicksville, which is a prototypical suburb, you know, not far from, you know, the iconic Levittown. It has been transformed into what a lot of the residents now call Little Punjab. It is heavily Indian. There are also Pakistanis. It has become an exciting, vibrant, and sustainable village downtown on the backs of new immigrants who are you know, not the, again, the stereotypical poor, low-wage, illegal worker, but these are folks who have good resumes, good education. They got a lot of capital that they bring over from their country. And they're the new customers now. They're the new employers, the new employees, the new investors in suburbia. And without them, the new immigrants and some of the existing minority groups that are also growing, suburbia doesn't really have a future.
And we were just talking to Gary Pierre from the Haitian Times, publishing for the Haitian diaspora in the New York area, and talking about how that community is spreading out from originally Brooklyn and Manhattan into the suburbs. There's a big Haitian population center in Spring Valley, for example. Mm-hmm. And politically, you see the suburbs trending Democratic over time. That was the story until recently, right? I mean, give us some of the history before we take some calls of the transition from what was Republican dominance,
sure,
to Democratic Party success in the New York suburbs, although now we see it, as I said at the beginning of the segment, starting to trend back Republican again, at least for the moment.
Sure. In the 50s and 60s, people came from the cities, and we'll stick to the New York suburbs. They came out here, and they did not bring their Democratic voting tendencies that they showed when they lived in Manhattan or Brooklyn or the Bronx or Queens. They became Republicans, at least in name and certainly in voting patterns. All levels of government, except for a few aberrations, a Republican-like Democrat would win a seat. But by and large, the suburbs were not only controlled by Republicans, but Nassau and Suffolk counties, again, to stick to that example, were the most powerful, the most feared local political organizations in America, on a par with the Daily Machine in Chicago. And then around 2000, the turn of the century, Republicans began to fall into disfavor. Some of it was just local mismanagement. You know, you're in power for so long, there's incrustation, there's a lack of attention, scandal creeps in. But part of it was that the moderate suburbanites who supported Republicans began to feel very uncomfortable with the party, at least its national image. These moderate suburbanites tended to be pro-choice. They were not anti-tax in the sense of who the heck moves to the suburbs for lower taxes. They were not anti-government. In fact, they moved out here, Brian, for many of the things that when government's working well, it does well. Good schools, great parks, crime-free communities. And the Democrats, by running candidates who understood these suburban sensibilities, by paying attention to more than just the international and national issues that Democrats were famous for obsessing on in the suburbs, when their neighbors really wanted stop signs and potholes filled, the Democrats began to do well, and they groomed some visionary leaders like Tom Suozzi and some very centrist, even conservative leaders like Steve Levy.
In Suffolk County.
Right. And this was a trend that was not limited to Long Island or Westchester or northern New Jersey. This was happening all over the country, and not just in congressional districts outside of major cities, but even at the town and village level, Democrats were winning elections until November. And that's when the tide turned. The question is, and we can go into all the details of it, the question is this a temporary pause in a trend that many people consider to be inevitable, that is Democratic control of the suburbs because of all the demographic and social changes, or is it a reversal and the last 10 years were the aberration?
But take it to the level of people's needs and interests, because it's not just folks watching cable TV and saying, oh, I like that guy, I don't like this guy. This relates to people's real lives and what they want from government and their idea of America. So did we see a Rob Astorino, Republican elected in Westchester County, Mangano beating Suozzi in Nassau, these things as part of the same movement, maybe movement is too strong a word, that got Scott Brown elected in Massachusetts and shocked the country?
This is one of those fudge answers that I hated when I was a reporter and I'd ask the question of somebody. But it's sort of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's hard to compare on one level an intensively watched statewide election with a very high turnout, particularly for a January election, to a local race where there was record low turnout. I mean, you can make a case that national trends, state trends notwithstanding, Tom Suozzi lost because 22% of the Democrats turned out, and he left $2 million in his campaign account looking towards a future run for a higher office. You can say that Andy Spano lost in Westchester because he'd been around a very long time, and people were ready for change, mm-hmm. the same way they were when Mario Cuomo decided to go for a fourth term.
All right.
But clearly the national trends contributed locally. Clearly there was a sense in Nassau and Westchester that these guys were not paying attention to what voters cared about, the way they were beginning to feel that Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid weren't paying attention to things they cared about on the bigger issues.
Suburban listeners, as we asked before, if you are second-generation suburban or more, call in and talk about your parents' suburbs and your suburbs, as well as your parents' suburban politics and your suburban politics. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For Larry Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra, the first of a four-part February series on the New York suburbs. It'll be in this time slot every Thursday this month. Catherine in Baldwin, you're on WNY in Babylon, I'm sorry. Thanks for calling, Catherine. Hi.
Thank you. I am, I guess, a third-generation suburbanite, and yet I always identify as a New Yorker. when my mother grew up in Brooklyn partway, and then they moved to Rockville Center. And I think that was the one bit of upward mobility that the family had. I grew up in West Hempstead, and raised my family in Babylon. But even keeping in mind that Babylon's, 55 minutes away from Penn Station and, 20 minutes from the beach, I think that there's a false polarity between suburbanites and New York City people, especially the people who live in the boroughs. And sometimes I wonder, people who, like on your show, when you ask something of New Yorkers, that seems implicitly to assume that, suburbanites would have a
that
different...
There's a split. So what's, and I have to move on to another caller, but what's the commonality that you want to express?
The commonality, I think that there's more generational difference, and I think the commonality is that sense of individuality. This is your house, this is your, this is the place you live. Things seem to be on a very manageable, on a more manageable mm-hmm. level. I think there is a great deal of, the neighborhood, but that varies.
Catherine, thank you so much for your call.
Brian, I think Catherine makes a very interesting point that academics and political analysts often argue. What really is a suburb? In most other parts of the country, most of Queens would be considered a suburb. We just happen to have this five borough conglomeration of governance.
Mm-hmm.
Douglaston, Little Neck. I mean, if it looks like a suburb and walks like and talks like a suburb, it's a suburb. And in those communities, clearly, the voting patterns in Queens and especially Staten Island are often very suburban in character, having a strong resemblance, say, to Suffolk County in northern Westchester.
There are, though, and we'll get into this in future shows, political divides between city and suburb that you can see clearly in demographics, that you can see clearly in how people vote, and battles for resources that imply political philosophy, not just money. But we'll get into those. Linda in Wantagh, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Brian. Longtime listener. I absolutely love your show.
Thank you. Are you second-generation suburbs?
I'm sorry?
Are you second-generation suburbs?
Second-generation suburbs. And I wanted to say that I think property taxes are the number one reason that Swazi lost. And there have been Tea Party demonstrations along Sunrise Highway for months over the summertime with signs and Mangano signs everywhere. And it's just like, it's really a backlash. I really think it's all about a backlash and about property taxes and the fact that, Swazi was responsible for the reassessment and it was a total failure.
Does the Nassau County property tax Tea Party movement connect to an anti-Obama health care reform, that kind of thing, anti-tax national movement, in your opinion, Linda?
I think that the voters are really thinking that the country is getting away from, I don't think this personally, but I'm just saying what I think they think, because mm-hmm. you can see it, I've talked to some of them, a lot of people in the area, and they'll just say that the government is not representing what our country is supposed to be about anymore.
Linda, thank you. And let me go on to Robert in Mamaroneck, second-generation suburban in Westchester. Hi, Robert, you're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning, Brian.
You want to talk about how it's changed from your parents' day to yours?
Well, my parents were, unlike their entire family, were registered Democrats, and so am I. But I think that any analysis of the past election in Westchester and Nassau County has to begin with an analysis of who voted. And from there, as was referenced indirectly with the 22%
right.
turnout
the,
for
the,
Democrats
the same
in Nassau.
The Republican vote didn't increase, but a lot of Democrats stayed home, right?
Exactly right, and that was our experience in Westchester. And the question is, and by the way, I'm not active politically. Mm-hmm. I'm just a longtime observer, previously active politically. And I think the question is why? And there was a reference made to Angie Spano's longtime service. But for whatever reason, there was clearly a significant, I would say, cataclysmic drop-off in Democratic votes.
So let's get away from the political analysis stuff at that level. Talk to me about what people in Mamaroneck talk about when it comes to politics and needs. What are the local issues that you find people are talking about the most?
Well, I think that clearly there is a desire to understand how we can cap tax increases in municipal and education, municipal government and education. There's a big focus here now on the cost of health insurance for public employees. Of course, public employees would say, hey, that was part of the deal when I signed up. But nevertheless, that is the case in Westchester, that people are looking at that.
Robert, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. And Larry Levy from the Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra. This is it. I mean, we have a board full of callers. We'll have to continue this next week as this segment is going to be on in this time slot on Thursdays all month. But, I mean, we have callers from, you know, waiting from Massapequa and Baldwin and Purchase and all over the place.
You sound like a Long Island Railroad conductor calling out the next station.
Massapequa Park. I know. But everybody wants to talk about property taxes.
Yeah, they do. And you know, the caller, Linda, who mentioned that she thought Tom Suozzi lost because of property taxes, that may be true, but the irony is that, you know, here's the guy who went around the state leading a commission and came up with a lot of ideas about how to cap, rein in property taxes, and except for one big increase his first year 8 years ago, had basically held the line, maybe even irresponsibly held the line by either borrowing or putting off costs to the future. But it does explain the high level of energy on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm.
The Tea Party people, there was an energy tax that the folks in Nassau were upset about. But in the broader sense, there were plenty of Democrats who were disgusted with their own party, who were disappointed in Barack Obama, who were demoralized by Democratic leadership and or lack of it in Albany. And when the party leaders in Nassau called up and said, hey, we need you to work, they said, no, thanks. Or maybe they didn't actually say it to their faces. They wanted to keep their jobs, but they didn't work like they used to.
Well, we actually have another guest coming up later in the show who's going to say the American suburbs, despite what a lot of people in the central city in New York think, are alive and well. The suburban dream is alive and well in America and will continue to be even as the country becomes much more Hispanic and much more Asian. So we'll talk to Joel Kotkin about that coming up. And we have just scratched the surface, clearly.
Yeah, I'd like to show Joel some data, which I'm sure he has, and I'd be curious to listen to where he's coming from.
So that's coming up next hour. And Larry Levy, you'll be back next week in this same time slot for Thursdays on the New York suburbs. Thanks a lot for doing this again. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for having me in Hofstra.
And again, we have just scratched the surface on these conversations.